Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cricket Unfiltered, the News Corp cricket podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel, in the Tim Payne Studios. They were the Steve Smith Studios for a very short amount of time, but I'm in the Tim Payne Studios. And I have with me two excellent cricket journalists, and they're too modest to admit this, but I've got Ben Horne and Pete Lawler here, and I would say two of the best cricket journalists in the country, the best connections, the best insights, and so we are thrilled to have them. So welcome to the show, Ben. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Manus. Yeah, looking forward to talking some cricket after, you know, a few weeks of trying to hide away from it all.
Well, I saw you get in trouble by an AFL player. I'm not sure what you got in trouble for or why, but he wasn't happy.
Making friends wherever you go, Ben.
Yeah, I'm saving you from AFL. One of the main issues
with it, I don't know much about AFL, so yeah, I'm coming from a very low base of knowledge, and sometimes you can get things wrong when you don't know what you're talking about.
Don't know much, but you know what you don't like. Yeah, is that right? Yeah.
And the other panellist is, of course, Pete Lawler from The Australian. How are you, Pete?
Not too bad, yeah. Like Ben, I've been trying to avoid talking about cricket for about a month, but anyway, it's good to be back. I'm feeling the vibe again, to be honest, Andrew.
You feeling the cricket vibe?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm getting excited. I'm going away in a couple of weeks. It's one day tour, which is exciting.
Oh, heading off to London and the UK. Lovely.
Yeah.
See how Manus sort of separated them as two different things: London
and the UK
and the rest of England.
Yeah, that's very, very wise.
Are you going to both places or just one?
Yeah, no, I will be leaving London, unfortunately.
I did see someone put in Ireland with the UK when talking about Ireland's recent foray into Test cricket, but they are their own country. Want to put that out there.
Now, are we going to talk about that later?
We might do. Who knows this show? Who knows? But let's start with you, Pete. You wrote some really interesting pieces on Tim Payne last week. You caught up with him in Tasmania. How was that?
That was good, actually. Yeah, it was good to get away from the noise of cricket and just see where he was at, take his pulse. He's a very impressive bloke, Tim Payne. And I think he always has been an impressive bloke. I was actually talking to Chappell during the week, Greg Chappell, and Tim sort of sparked this, but Greg said Tim Payne would have played, in under normal circumstances, played 100 tests by now. And Greg was the guy who basically earmarked him, got him into that T20 team, liked what he saw, and then when Tim was about to leave, this time last year, Tim Payne had given up cricket. He basically made the call to go and work for Kookaburra and move to Melbourne. But Greg Chappell was one of the voices saying, mate, can you just hang around? And hung around and he became the Australian captain.
Yeah, Greg Chappell's one of the silent forces in Australian cricket, isn't he? He doesn't speak a lot in public, but he does wield a lot of influence. You know, everyone talks about the coach or Pat Howard or Trevor Holmes, but Chappell does do a lot behind the scenes, doesn't he?
He does. I mean, there's only a couple of selectors left now and he's one of them. And, I always like listening to his opinions on the game. He hasn't always been the most popular figure amongst state cricketers, it must be said. But, I like Greg Chappell's thoughts on the game. And, with Mark Waugh gone from the panel, he could be playing an even more significant role.
State cricketers didn't like him, did they? Because they always figure that he was the champion of the potential. You know, he wanted to get people in while they had potential and before they'd proven themselves. That was the perception. But in the past, in the summer, I think he proved that he's got more strings to his bow. I mean, the very fact that he backed Payne and the sorts of people that they brought into the team, like Sean Marsh, and, you know, they brought in older guys as well. So I think that's been nipped in the bud a little bit, that Chappell's obsessed with adolescent cricketers.
And I think it was viewed as a little bit of a sort of reflection on how his career path started. He was so young when he was thrown into the side, he thought that was the best way to go for other players. There was something in your article that Tim Payne that really struck me was that he couldn't look at his own baggy green for a while because he got so annoyed. I found that really insightful.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I've always had this, I've always wondered with the guys that play one test or two tests and say, gee, would it have been better not to have played a test at all? Because you basically get the experience and then it's taken away from you. And that's where Tim was coming from, wasn't it? That he played the four tests. He made his debut with Steve Smith at Lord's against Pakistan in 2010. But by this time last year, Smith had played 50 tests and was the captain of Australia. He'd played four and was never going to play another test again. He was basically going to give up cricket, wasn't he? So that hurt him. He said it didn't bother him when he was going through the finger operations, seven finger operations over 7 years. He says, but when he finally broke through it, you know, like when the finger fixed up and he came back to cricket, and he just didn't have it anymore. That's when it really hurt, because he knew he would never be wearing, or he thought he would never be wearing that baggy green again, and stuffed it in a box.
Like looking at pictures of an ex-girlfriend or something.
I've only ever been, had one.
Oh, so romantic, babe.
I know. Well, we met when we were very young, and I'm that sort of guy.
So am I, if you'd like to know.
Hi, sir.
The other thing I wanted to raise about Tim Payne... this podcast has gone off the rails already.
Yeah, I wanted to raise some things about him too, but
you're running the shop. No, no, no.
You know what I really liked about him?
Yeah.
That gorgeous family, Bonnie and Miller. I mean, I'm a bit of a sucker for babies. Their daughter Miller is so cute. He got home, I mean, because that was kind of the theme of the article, wasn't left holding the baby. But when he got back from South Africa, where he'd been left holding the baby, i.e. the cricket team... his wife went to Bali for 10 days and he was left with a 10-month-old daughter. So it's the Australian captain and his daughter are just hanging around in the suburbs, you know, having baby chinos and playing in the TP. Some readers got up me for spelling TP, T-I-P-I. That is actually how you spell that brand. That's one way of spelling it, and that's actually the brand spelling too. So this could be the TP room, by the way. Or wigwam, whatever you want.
One thing that struck me is that about Tim Payne, that we all want him to do well and we all like him, and he certainly has the qualities of leadership, but great players like Adam Gilchrist have said it is too much being captain and wicketkeeper at the same time, and being able to, you know, you have to concentrate on your batting as well. So you've got three jobs, captain, a wicketkeeper and a batsman. It's just too hard. So why do we think Tim Payne can do it?
Well, he has to do it because there's no other choice. You know, maybe in a perfect world, you wouldn't have the wicketkeeper as captain, but there's no one else that can captain the team. And I don't think anyone's suggesting that Tim Payne is going to be the captain for the next 5 years, for example. I think they'd be hoping that in the next couple of years, there's a younger candidate that emerges and there's a bit of a succession plan. But, you know, it probably isn't ideal, but Tim Payne clearly has the best credentials to do the job, and he has to do it.
Well, I've just got a text here from MS Dhoni.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He wants to... He's not quite sure about what you're alleging. he seems to have pulled it off all right in three forms.
Okay. All right, MS.
Yeah. But well, no, MS can do it. It's a tough job, and it was interesting that Gilly was a pretty intense guy. And he captained the first three tests in India in 2004. And by the end of the second test, he was falling apart. The stress really got to him. But I think they're different personalities. And I think one thing that Tim flagged very early on was that he would be looking toward the coach to carry a fair bit of the role, that he was going to keep his role pared back a little bit. And I think CA will be very conscious of that. And Justin is the sort of guy, Justin Langer, is the sort of guy who will want to shoulder some of the burdens that the captain may shoulder. So it depends on your relationship with your coach too. And that's why Dizzy wouldn't have been the right coach, because Dizzy is, while very good at his job and a great bloke and all those things, hi Jason, he's a bit more stand back, let the captain and the team run themselves. I mean, I'm sure he could have changed, but he believes in delegating, and that's not quite what we need. Australia needs all shoulders to the wheel. Ben and I will be contributing a little bit here and there, won't we? You know,
what are you doing? Well, are you on this review? Are you on this review? I've sent my application in and no one's got back to me.
Haven't got a phone call yet. But, no. I mean, I think with Gilchrist, you know, he had Ricky Ponting. I mean, while he was doing the job, there was still Ricky Ponting there. If he was living in a world where there was no Ricky Ponting, he may have felt a bit more bullish about doing the job himself. But I think, you know, Gilchrist is a very modest guy, and it just didn't feel like he was the man to do the job. But I think the necessity of the situation that Australia's that Tim Payne's confronted with means that he'll just sort of
I guess the worry is that one of the facets of his game doesn't suffer. He's averaged 40 with the bat in Test cricket since he came back. You know, we don't want it to
look. I'll be surprised if he plays much more One Day cricket after this series that's coming up now. I don't think that part of it's ideal. I can see
who takes that job.
I can see why they're doing it for this
year. Carey.
I think
Carey's going to be the World Cup captain.
No, the World Cup keeper.
Oh. And Finch will be captain.
Well, that's what I mean. Well, who's going to be captain?
Finch.
Oh, the Finchinator. I'd probably be going for someone else. Mitchell Marsh
is going to be the World Cup. Yeah, I'd probably be. That's more likely. But good luck getting it off Tim Payne. He's gonna have squatters' rights by
then.
Yeah,
look, if Tim Payne performs really well in this one day series, then clearly, you know, it's gonna be his spot. But he's got to have a good series because Alex Carey's a very talented player who's coming through and someone that they've signalled that they want to start getting games into. So, I think performance is going to be important for Tim Payne in the one day sort of things.
Well, it's no secret that they actually wanted Carey to keep in this series, didn't they? Before all the changes happened, you know, until JL had his voice and said, no, that's not going
to
happen.
And I've got to say, I was slow to realising this, but it's very good sense to have Tim Payne as captain for this series because it is the start of something, and to have Payne and Langer together, I think, makes a lot of sense. But I'm just not sure how, you know, unless Tim Payne hits it out of the park, I'm not sure how long he'll be playing one day cricket for.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And just lastly, before we leave Tim Payne, Pete, how deep are the scars from South Africa?
With Tim Payne?
Yeah.
I don't think they're that deep with Tim, to be honest. I think he'd only been in the team for a brief time. I mean, he's good mates with Smithy. He's sensible. He's older. He's Tasmanian, so he's not prone to emotion. Sorry about that, but they tend to be like that. They're very practical people. The scars are very, very deep in the team and in the culture of the team, and you know the way that they will advance from here. Well, everything you can be referenced back and will be referenced back because I'll be the guy referencing them. But those scars are really deep and will last a long time.
So generally,
what do you reckon, Ben? I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean this. Yeah, I mean. Well, you've got 12 months until two or three of the key players come back, and then I guess you've got another couple of years on top of that with them settling back into the team and whatever happens from there. So, I mean, this is a huge thing for the entire generation of cricketers who are playing at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, and England is not going to be kind.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, what the crowds give to our players and how they receive it.
Yeah. They'll get what they deserve, but...
I think the fact that Smith and Warner won't be there...
That will help.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the sort of, you know, the it's a good team that Australia's taking over under the circumstances, but they're missing a lot of stars. I mean, they're missing Stark and Cummins as well. Mitchell Marsh, there's a lot of players missing from this team.
A lot riding on the performance with the World Cup in England next year. Now, next bit of... We're going around the news, Ben, and Ben Scoop's horn was added again since the last podcast, revealed to the world that Mark Waugh was stepping down as a selector. But one thing in the story, you wrote that it is a blow to Cricket Australia. Do you really think it's a blow? Because I would disagree.
I do, yeah. I think it's very difficult to
Let's argue.
Yeah. My argument is that it's very difficult to find high-profile ex-cricketers who want to be selectors. And, I'm not sure who the next person will be if they do find a replacement. But I thought Mark Waugh, you know, had a good brain for it. And I liked how outspoken he was. I mean,
it was a blow to journalism.
Yeah. Like, I loved it how he'd just get on the commentary and speak his mind. And, you know, he's the most honest guy in cricket. I thought his contribution was good. He was only commentating on the Big Bash, and obviously now expanding to commentate on Test cricket as well, perhaps maybe may have compromised him a bit more and also compromised his time a bit more. But, you know, I didn't have a massive problem with him being a T20 or a selector and a T20 commentator. I didn't really have an issue with that.
I don't think it's a good look for the selection panel to have a public commentate, someone commentating while being on the selection panel. Trevor Holmes, Greg Chappell, they never speak in public about players unless a team is announced, and then they give a good opinion. So I think it's probably better for the selection panel if they don't have someone commentating. I admit it's great for us, and we all love hearing the things coming from the selection panel, and Mark Waugh would let things slip because he was just in front of the microphone for so long things come out.
Well, I think that there's other communication issues with selectors other than people getting on a broadcast and saying stuff. I mean, players have issues with other aspects of how they communicate with them in private. So I don't think Mark Waugh commentating was the biggest issue that the selection panel has. And, I mean, by his own admission, it's probably a bit of an awkward position to be in, and he probably did say things that perhaps he shouldn't have, but I don't think it's hurting anyone.
Why do you have to have secrets? Why shouldn't we know what the selectors are thinking? Why shouldn't the thought processes be out there and writ large? I mean, not just to the players involved. You know, you're hopeless outside off stump, or, you know, you've never bowled anything outside
off stump. I guess the issue, though, is if say, Mark Waugh says something about Glenn Maxwell but hasn't said it to Glenn Maxwell first. So you're hearing it from the newspapers or the commentary box.
Yeah, I guess there is that, but that happens quite often now.
But I guess the other thing about Mark Waugh stepping down is England have appointed Ed Smith as a selector and he's building a team of scouts. You know, surely Pete's just fallen under the desk. He's, but do you think Australia needs something like that, a system of scouts to support the selectors?
Well, certainly, I think Pat Howard's idea of how things should run is that the coach should be the man most responsible, and perhaps there would be a selector alongside him, but that you don't need a team of selectors. You rely on the people you have in each state.
I have a problem with that because of state biases. I don't think that is a good way of running. You have a natural bias to support players in your own state. It needs to be taken out of state hands.
That's Continue. True. That's true to a degree. But
Sorry. I think that's a fair point, Manus. But logistically, it's a tough job for Cricket Australia. There's so much cricket being played now to kind of keep tabs on where everyone is and all that kind of thing. Yeah, it's difficult. And like I say, good luck finding another selector who had Mark Waugh's profile.
Yeah, and the problem is finding somebody who can be at that much cricket to do that job. I mean, you've got to be paid a lot of money to go and watch that much cricket to do that job, or you find a guy who, or a woman who is seeing that cricket anyway. So that's why I think using the commentator sometimes is a reasonable shortcut. I mean, there's quite an issue now in cricket. And it's not just with selectors, it's with state coaches as well, is that you actually can't afford the people who would be best for the job. They've lost the best coaches to the IPL, because I mean, in 8 weeks they can pick up twice what they get paid for doing what is a 8-month job in Australia. And so, similarly, you drop down to the selectors, that's a hard job. You've got to show up all the time. And there was one morning there when... and in fact, I think we recorded the podcast that day in your car, Menas, at Hurstville Oval, where Mark Waugh wasn't there. And a journalist rang Cricket Australia and said, you know, there's no selector at this game. It's kind of an important game. You know, there's Bancroft, Marsh, the whole Australian team, which sometimes called New South Wales, playing. About 2.5 hours later, you saw Mark Waugh get out of the car, slam the door and walk past the journalist and say, thanks, mate, because he'd been at home watching it on the TV. But, you know, you need to be seen to be there. So it's quite demanding on your time, that job.
Yeah, I just think with the $1.2 billion TV deal, they can sink some money into a full-time selector. A couple of hundred K, bang, there you go.
Just one, but...
Well, one full-time selector to...
One can't be at three state matches.
No, but you have one with the system of scouts. One with a system of scouts.
Okay, yeah, that could work, yeah.
A. Menas would be an excellent scout. All right, now, that was the introduction. Let's move on to the week...
It'll be a long show.
Like, 2 hours. Let's get into the week in cricket headlines, brought to you by The Australian. And I urge you all to go on and sign up to The Australian on the digital platform. You do have to pay for good journalism now. That is the way the internet is going. So don't be slow. You can read all of Pete's stuff at The Australian. Good ad. There we
that
go.
That was good, yeah.
Off the cuff. All right, let's get the first bit of news. Bill Laurie has confirmed his retirement. Certainly the right time at 81.
Yeah, well, what was he going to do? It was a bit late to start another job, wasn't it, with Channel 9 going? And he last, was it about 3 seasons? I think he'd only been doing about one.
Sydney and Melbourne,
because his wife hasn't been well, and she's not a big fan of cricket, and there's some bitterness about the way that she and he were treated in the past. Do you remember his Alan Border medal speech? One of the great AB medal speeches. I urge you all to go and find it. Bill was outstanding, not being the clown that he often, well, you know, that clownish caricature that he can be on Channel 9. I don't miss him. It was always exciting to go down to Melbourne and see, in the past 3 years, when, you know, after Tony had died and Richie had died, seeing Bill, you're going, oh, you know, last of the Invincibles in a way, wasn't he? Mm. You know,
yeah, great, yeah, so great to see him around the box. I mean, yeah, it's sort of. I remember once seeing Richie Beno walk through the corridors at the SCG, and it was one of the only times in my life I reckon I actually have been starstruck.
Did you cry?
No, just, you know, like normally, you know, you sort of see cricketers and sports people walk past and you don't really pay much attention. But when I saw Richie Beno go past,
I stood next to Viv at the urinals once.
I don't know how to expand on that, but just the last thing about Bill Laurie.
He was great.
He was great at the urinals?
I don't think, I think this is the right decision for Bill to make because...
I think Foxtel and Channel 7 would have been desperate to get him on, even for one or two tests a year, because he would have given them sort of that rollover from Channel 9, that's, I don't know what the word is, gravitas maybe.
I think they both did inquire about his services, but I got the impression that Bill Laurie probably would have been quite happy to hang up the microphone a few years ago, and he's sort of, you know, he's... kind of loyalty to Channel 9 and all that kind of thing. He's been happy to do the Melbourne and Sydney test. But, look, I don't think he needs to see any more test cricket. And, you know, the only network he's ever worked for has lost the rights after 40 years. I think it's the right call.
And don't underestimate the effect that Greggy's death had on him. They were very close. They worked together very well. And he was really upset by his death. And, when your mates start leaving the room, you don't really want to start walking back into it. Last time I saw him, I tried to convince him to write a book, and he wouldn't. And I actually had a publisher ring me this week saying, can you get Bill to write a book? And I said, I wish we could. So if you do see Bill anywhere about, encourage him to write his book, because he's got some great stories. I mean, it would be a really good cricket book.
Right, the other news in the commentary circuit, this is a Lawler scoop. Warney went to Foxtel. And joining Warney at Foxtel, Mel Jones, Issa Gua, Mike Hussey, and Michael Vaughan. I'm happy with all of those. I do like Mike Hussey, but I don't know if he's got, I wouldn't say no sense of humour, but he has very little sense of humour and no cynicism at all in him. He's straight down the line into cricket, which I respect.
Maybe he could get Sybil to work for him some days. You know Sybil?
No.
That's Mike After Dark, a very entertaining character.
Really?
Yes. After a few beers, he has an alter ego called Sybil.
That's right.
He's up on tabletops. He's
like Chris
dancing.
Rogers.
He's
crazy.
Loud. He's fun. Yeah. I think
Has he got that sort of mean cynicism to him or anything, or is he...
Sybil doesn't, no.
Okay.
Oh, what...
Sybil does.
I don't think
It's hard for us to comment on commentators because we don't hear them. We see them in the back of the box, but we don't hear them.
I think Mike Hussey's a very good analyst of the game, and not afraid to give an opinion. I know he ruffled a few feathers in Melbourne last summer when they had the microscope on England and what they were doing to the ball. So yeah, I was always a bit surprised that Nine got rid of Mike Hussey, so I think he'll be a good picker.
What about the Warne-Gilchrist dynamic? There's a little bit of press about that. I think it's overblown.
What a beat up. They're best mates. Didn't you see the photo in the weekend's paper?
Yeah, they were standing next to each other. Yeah.
Go on.
Well, Gilly took more dismissals off Shane Warne than Ian Healy.
Yeah, and I think it was pretty much a one-way street. Gilly doesn't care. He's not going to be worried by Shane. And Shane actually has got such a thick skin in the end. Mm. Yeah, he doesn't
but
care.
But I think it adds to the dynamic, if anything.
Just needling each other and arguing. It's good. That's what you want.
If they did, you don't want them to be too chummy, do you?
Pete, I'm a bit worried about your friend Punter, Ricky Ponting, at Channel 7.
He's got a couple of mates there now, I think, doesn't he?
So who else he got there?
Michael Slater. Damien Fleming.
Yeah, I don't think any of these have been confirmed yet, have they?
No,
they're all sort of in the pipes. Jimmy Brayshaw looking to sort of consolidate his work at Channel 7.
Maybe Ben
AFL.
Horn.
Ben Horn. Great.
You heard it here
first.
Ricky Smart. Ricky knows where the gold is buried, and by God, he's getting a lot of money for that gig.
Yeah, I heard north of $600,000 per year.
Yeah, and how many days' work do you reckon he's doing?
Well,
he's not doing the whole series.
No.
Right. He has scooped the pool.
And what about Ian Chappell?
If you get a job at Channel 7, you'll actually have to contribute to his wages. You won't be getting paid.
Happy to. Ian Chappell, where do we think he'll go? Last one. Will he stay with Channel 9? Because, again, 7 would be... He would be 7, wouldn't he?
I wouldn't be surprised if Ian Chappell ended up in radio. I think
ABC.
I think he'd be a very good asset on the ABC.
Was he doing radio last year for Triple M, wasn't he?
Macquarie.
Well, they've got
and,
the...
And I think Macquarie are going to buy some rights, so he may end up staying with them. But, yeah, Pete and I have discussed, I think Ian Chappell would be an excellent addition to the ABC. I think he'd really, you know, really add something to
their
coverage.
Is that high profile enough for him, though?
No. Well, he fits. He's pro-refugee. Yeah, refugee rights. He's very strong on that. So he'd fit in
at
the ABC.
But he just loves... Like,
if Joe Pete throws in something unexpected.
Ian Chappell loves cricket, and he loves the game, and I don't think... He'd be too concerned about...
I actually think he's better on radio than TV.
Yeah, and the ABC have got concerns because how long can Jim Maxwell go on? I mean, they've got some very good young commentators who are going to make names for themselves over the years, but they do need a little bit of that sort of gravitas, that brand, you know, the brass plates. Mm. And Ian brings that, doesn't he?
Well, not to mention Chris Rogers now has a coaching gig with Cricket Australia. Simon Kadich has coaching gigs.
I think he's going to commentate. Unless he has to do the CPL doesn't cross it. No.
What about the South African thing?
Possible, yeah.
I mean, they may have a couple of spots to fill, is what I'm saying, and I think Ian Chappell will be very good.
All right, now let's move on from the commentary circuit to Australia cancelling, and I put in inverted comma, cancelling hosting Bangladesh in the top end this winter for a two-test tour. Now, I follow cricket very closely. I never heard once that Australia were intending on hosting Bangladesh. I know it was in the FTP, but I would say that it was never going to happen.
Well, I'd heard of it. It was definitely sort of there as something that might go ahead. I think this is probably, I mean, there's a fairly long list at the moment, but this is one of the more ordinary things that Cricket Australia has done in a while, in my opinion. You know, there was a lot of jumping up and down about India not wanting to play a day-night test here, and to sort of, basically cancel a tour with Bangladesh in the same breath is hypocritical, to say the least, I would have thought. And, this argument about it wouldn't have made money, I mean, firstly, Cricket Australia should be able to absorb that. And secondly, do you not think that Fox Sports wouldn't buy the rights to broadcast cricket in, you know, that time of year? I'd be surprised if Cricket Australia couldn't have found a broadcaster, but perhaps...
Yeah, it would have been perfect. Wrong. It could have given some players a bit of experience heading into the tour of the UAE or wherever it could be. Could have been a soft entry for this new team after South Africa. Could have been on Foxtel or the ABC could have broadcast it. But instead we haven't hosted Bangladesh for almost 15 years.
I've just got a text here from Cricket Australia.
that phone texts are coming.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
do you need it? Charger for is it running out of battery?
Very hot, smoking.
And Cricket Australia maintain that this decision was reached last year, that Bangladesh were on board with them. They claim, and who am I to doubt, that Bangladesh agreed that they wouldn't be competitive in Australia and they're better off. And I said, well, they beat you a test to go, yeah, but that's in their own conditions. So Bangladesh are happy to play tests at home against Australia, but were just as happy not to play them this time around, and that Bangladesh were on board, and they were saying that this Chowdhury, is that his name, seems to have forgotten why they came to this agreement. I'm a little bit cynical because if you did have that meeting and come to that decision last year, why didn't you tell anybody? You're just telling us now. And I've just been handed by the statistician some very interesting, a pretty interesting breakdown on where and who and how Australia play cricket. And, gee, it's no surprise to anybody that in the last decade, 33 of the 57 tests have been played against three nations. That's England, India, South Africa. How many have been played against Bangladesh? Two.
Bloody disgrace.
It is. It's an absolute bloody disgrace.
I feel robbed of two tests. Now that we're talking about
This is at home. I'm sorry. The statisticians just pointed out I've got this wrong. This is of the home test. So we play 57 tests at home, 33 against three nations, none against Bangladesh, three against Sri Lanka, six against the West Indies. And if you go back 20 years, in the past 20 years, we played two test matches against Bangladesh. You've got to support the smaller nations. I don't care if you say they're competitive or not competitive. They proved to be competitive in one of the two tests we played against them. And you only have to look at how good it was for cricket. Pakistan fronting up to Ireland and playing a game of cricket. I know the schedule's tight, But you could have put in that tour, and as you say, you shot yourself in the foot by cancelling it, because that would have been perfect to get this team that's in disarray back together and have a little bit of an off-Broadway warm-up.
Absolutely, know? Yeah. And, I mean, you can't really blame the Bangladesh head honcho for now having a look at the Australian team and thinking, oh, perhaps that would have been a good tour. No Smith, no Warner.
Possibly spinning tracks up north.
Cummins.
I think I'm told that in the next FTP, they're not scheduled to play Australia at home anyway. So, you know, it's kind of weird, isn't it?
Very weird. All right, last cricket headline. Now, I had a very upset Queenslander come into my cafe last week and tell me that I had not mentioned once on the podcast that Queensland won the Sheffield Shield. So Anthony, if you're listening, I don't know if you remember, but the biggest story in cricket happened when Queensland won the Shield around the same time as Sandpaper Gate. But yes, Queensland won the Shield. Great for them on the back of great performances by Renshaw, Nisa, Wildermuth, Joe Burns, Brendan Doggett, didn't dog it. So great performance by the Queenslanders. Beat Tasmania in the final, but it was slightly overshadowed by Australian cricket melting down.
James Sutherland was doing a press conference that night in Johannesburg in a hotel. And I was wondering why there were messages appearing from Australian players ahead of his press conference, state players ahead of his press conference. I think they've got up at 4 a.m. to watch James's press conference. God, these guys are really into this story. And then I spoke to one of them on the phone. Drunkest men alive. That was the night the Sheffield Shield final had finished. They're all out on the turps.
On the turps.
Yeah, trying to follow it with one eye. But there you go. There's a little anecdote from the tour.
Yeah, and then two of those, Renshaw and Burns, would have gone straight to the airport. Yeah,
neither of them were the drunk ones.
Good. I would have believed that.
They were on the losing side, the drunk ones.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Before we take that break, I just want to let the listeners know there is a great promotion running at the moment with News. So if you're in Australia, go to your local News Corp paper, Daily Telegraph, Herald Sun, Courier Mail, Adelaide Advertiser, Hobart Mercury, and you get a free Samsung tablet if you sign up to subscribe to want that site. So if you do that, you get all of Horn, some of Lawler's stuff even appears on the News Corp's main sites. You'll also get Crash's stuff. It really is the best way to keep up with Australian cricket. So they're saying just search News Tablet Promotion in Google and that'll take you there.
That's a pretty good deal, isn't it?
Free tablet.
Free tablet, yeah.
That's why I'm doing it. And they haven't even asked me to do it, but it's such a good deal.
And if you're going to a festival later, you might be able to get that tablet checked.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break. While about a week and a half ago, actually the three of us, Ben, Pete and I, caught up with Nathan Lyon outside the SCG after his recall to the national ODI and T20 teams. So here's a bit of our chat with him and then we'll be back with the rest of the show.
What was the message last night?
That you picked in the one day stuff, and that's just a great opportunity for you to push your claims for the World Cup in 2019. And it's well documented that I want to play all three formats of cricket for Australia. That's my goal, and it has been my goal for a very long time to get this opportunity, be included in the squad, and to head over to England to where the World Cup's being placed. That's going to be a massive advantage, and hopefully if I get the opportunity to go out there and perform really well, but also alongside Ashton and Agar in the squad, just make sure we're training hard and preparing well and with the mindset of the World Cup in next year as yet.
Nathan, you had a lot of success in the Ashes against England's left-handers in particular. Can you have that, you know, can those same strategies work in one day cricket?
Yeah, I hope so. My biggest thing is bowling, going out and bowling my best ball. And I believe if I bowl my best ball consistently enough, hopefully you can do some damage or limit the runs in ODI cricket. Obviously, you've got to be a lot smarter and probably a lot quicker on your feet in the shorter formats than what you do in test matches. But it provides a great opportunity. They've got some world-class players with Morgan, Stokes, Butler, Root and these guys, so it's going to be an unbelievable challenge for Australian cricket side, but it's an exciting one.
Nathan, would you like to be Test vice-captain?
Test vice-captain, it's not on my radar, no. I'm a big one for believing you don't need a label to be a leader. So But if the opportunity come there, and I wouldn't say no to it if I was can help Tim Payne out. But I'm pretty sure I'll be able to help Tim Payne out without having a VC badge on my shoulder. So I'm pretty comfortable with where I'm sitting in the test side. Obviously the most experienced one there, with most games played. So if I can provide some assistance to Tim over the next 12 months, it's going to be a massive help to him.
What was the response like when you got back to Australia from South Africa? I mean, the public were pretty heated up at that point, weren't they?
I've been out in young, so to be honest, not much went on out there. And they were just pretty excited to see me back with mum and dad. So, it is what it is, and it's a good chance for Australian cricket to move on, and good chance for Australian players to really rebuild the trust and faith of the Australian public and earn back their respect.
Welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered, the News Corp cricket podcast. I'm here with Ben Horn and Pete Lawler, and that was Nathan Lyon talking about a week and a half ago about his recall to the national white ball teams. Firstly, Pete, I have to apologise. I sort of spoke over you there asking a question, and, you know, when I'm in those press packs, because I'm a very short man, if I don't speak really loudly and just go for it hell for leather, I never get a question in. So I'm sorry. I would hate to speak over you.
I think he was pretty offended from memory.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're good, now, the mate. Question is... If you don't stick to your question, someone's just going to walk over you.
Especially
so
me.
Fine, mate. Yeah.
Especially all those tall people. Well, I did ask Nathan Lyon who will be Test vice captain. What do you think, guys? I think he's someone that should be talked about. Most experienced player doesn't want the captaincy. I know he's not that really strong personality, but I think sometimes you want the quiet people walking out in the background doing some of the stuff. So I think someone like Nathan Lyon might be a good Test vice captain.
Yeah, I'd have a few ahead of him probably. I'd have Cummins, Marsh and Hazelwood ahead, I think, and possibly Khawaja if he's in the team.
Yeah, I wouldn't discount him. Yeah, he's. I probably 18 months to 2 years ago, I would have said no, because I think he was a really anxious guy. You know, I was running up to the wicketkeeper to ask how he was bowling all the time and those sorts of things. He's a different man now. He's much more confident in the way he goes about cricket. Why not?
Good.
I don't reckon fast bowlers should be anywhere near leadership. It's too hard.
Yeah.
You get fast bowling makes you stupid. It really does. It's just such hard work. I mean, it's hard to think and bowl fast.
Mm-hmm.
And there's thousands of examples of that out there.
And not only that, you do get your blood going when you're running in and bowling fast. You can get a bit of the red mist in those big spells. So, and also, you know, bowlers come in and out of the side more. So, you know, they get little niggles and miss a test here or there. That's why I think someone like Nathan Lyon would be a good fit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly not knocking Nathan's credentials for it, but I mean, I can't, in terms of a personality, I can't go past Cummins and Mitchell Marsh. Mm. I just think what they bring to the table, I mean, how much tactical work does the vice captain need to do? I mean, if the captain gets injured, perhaps he'd make a different decision, but I think, you know, if you wanted to elevate someone to a leadership position, I really like what Cummins and Marsh offer.
Who's going to go around the dressing room and give someone a pat on the back if they need it, or give someone a bit of a quiet word about lifting their game? You know, are Cummins and Marsh those characters?
I think a whole team does so. That, don't they? Depending on where you're at. There should be a few people in the team that can talk to it.
Marsh and Cummins are both, and again, I'm not making any comment about anyone else in the team, but Cummins and Marsh are just decent guys, I think. And I think...
very popular, aren't they?
Yeah. And I think that they, you know, certainly that they're mature. Marsh has had to do some maturing. But I think those guys are kind of at the level that you want for a vice captain, as in stepping up the leadership ladder and perhaps someone they could invest in for the future. But I do take Pete's point that the chances of Pat Cummins actually captaining that team are small, given he's a fast bowler. So it depends what you want out of your vice captain, I guess.
And the other thing is that the new coach has already made his thoughts clear, really, by making Young Marsh the captain of the stateside when he was a coach there. So he sees something in him, doesn't he?
Mm.
I mean, whether Paddy Cummins pushes past him or not, I don't know. But clearly JL likes his leadership potential. You wrote a really interesting thing, Ben, like you do most of the time, all of the time. It's an interesting reflection on Usman Khawaja that he never got mentioned
in leadership discussions and where he's at and what people think of him. Because he probably, well, I don't know, would he? Would he make a good vice-captain? He's a captain of Queensland, isn't
he? Yeah, well, I mean, granted he has spent a lot of time in international cricket the last couple of years, but, I mean, he seems to have done a good job in Queensland. I mean, they like him up there, and they've had some success with him on the field, and they've continued to have success when he's left as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think Khawaja would be a good choice, but I was just going to say the major issue that Australia has is almost all of their candidates are either fast bowlers or not guaranteed their place in the team. I mean, even Mitchell Marsh, as good as he was in the Ashes, he's now got another injury. I mean, he still needs to cement his own spot, as do all these other guys that they mentioned in the one-day format, and as does Khawaja. I mean, I think Usman Khawaja is in serious danger of getting dropped for the next test. So,
isn't that an interesting reflection on the top five batsmen?
Mm.
That none of them have their spot nailed down and can be mentioned as sort of in the leadership group.
Mm. Mm.
Lots of decisions then to be made for the selectors. All right, let's go on.
You got a bit Mick Jagger there with your microphone, didn't you?
Oh, I am rocking it up here. You've got a bit Mick Jagger this whole podcast, Pete. All right, let's go to the next segment. The podcast's own decision review system. So there's been lots of proposals in world cricket. We are going to give them the green or red light. We probably won't all agree on this, but let's start. The ICC Future Tours program has been formed for the period 2019 to 2023. A big change. The 2021 Champions Trophy is now a World T20 tournament. Now, Australia have a World T20 in 2020, and a year later there's another one. Doesn't that take the gloss off our tournament? You know, we'll win the tournament, and then 6 months later we'll lose it again.
This is news that's just coming to me now, but I agree that it's weird. I mean, I don't know why they would do that, but that's the ICC for you.
I think they think the Champions Trophy's
which
on
it
the
is,
way out.
And they should have realised that probably 5 years ago. I'm not sure why we had the last Champions Trophy, but they should have had a World 2020 that year.
Pete, do you think it's a bad idea, or
bad idea. Yeah, the world needs fewer international T20 matches. Okay, it's a domestic game.
One year after each other just doesn't make sense.
It's just silly.
Just telling T.
Anyway, you know, it's basically like the it's like a sausage sale outside the hardware shop for the ICC, isn't it? That tournament. It's just a way of raising funds for the ICC.
Yeah, exactly. Next one, the Test Championship is to kick off in 2019 and run for 2 years, with a final starting June 10th. Australia playing someone. That's June 10th, 2021. Australia might be playing someone. They proposed to have the first two finals in England, but I think one of the finals should be the SCG or the MCG. There's no India-Pakistan test clashes in that first cycle, which is a disappointment. But the Ashes in England in 2019 will be the first series of the Test Championship. So what do we think? We really need this Test Championship.
Well, just on the point of the final, I mean, it's really hard for an Australian ground to do it because it's Aussie rules season.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's going to be difficult. But I like the idea of the final being at Lord's.
Yeah, like, good luck finding a pitch at the SCG or the MCG in the middle of the year, mate. The MCG ones, someone's put it out the back behind the stands and they're going to have to look for 2 weeks to find it. And the SCG one's under, like, thick grass.
I was sending Ben a message yesterday that I struggle to watch the Swans games at the SCG because I see them running on the pitch the whole time and I get upset. So
that's happened for 100 years, Andrew.
I know.
That's the way.
It's upset me my whole life.
It is part of the natural order of things.
Yeah, and it's upset me my whole life. But it's better than drop-ins.
They can dig it out if you want.
No, it's better than drop-ins. Okay, so do we like the Test Championship?
I think so. I mean, you know, let's see how it actually works when it's put into practice. But in theory, I think it does add a bit more context to certain series. It's kind of a bit odd to think about the Ashes or India or a big series like that fitting kind of into a bigger framework. But yeah, I think in theory I do like it, but I can see it being a bit of a rabble as well, because as Pete was touching on before, I mean, how many times are we going to play certain nations? Like, how's it all going to work?
So it's the top nine
test
playing
nations.
But
I like it that they're trying to do something.
Yeah, and they play six series.
It's the top nine, is it? Yeah.
The top nine play six series over the 2 years, and then every 2 year cycle, they'll play a final. Look, it does
that's just like test cricket, isn't it? The tournament takes
2 years,
yeah. So you know that India aren't playing Pakistan?
Yeah, there's
no... Has that
no,
been announced, has it? Because I know that it's all been penciled in and... I saw a fixture late last year in... I think that was at the start of November, and 3 weeks later I saw another one. So I don't know how many times it's changed since then. I certainly haven't seen the latest ones.
Let's see what happens with that one. The other idea is to scrap... The other idea is to... A bit of inside journo talk here. One of the proposals with the Test Championship is to scrap the toss in Test cricket. So the away side has the choice of batting or bowling, and that is to nullify the home advantage. I don't think this is the way to do it.
I agree. Because, you know, home advantage usually means juicing up... Well, when home advantage means juicing up the pitch, you get great matches, don't you? Like those three-day games in India that are just... a feast. It just seems a bit awkward. Something needs to be done. I don't know what it is. And it's not just Australian whinging on this topic. I used to be a little funny about it. And the last time Australia played in India, I was talking to Darren Lehman. I said, look, in 2004, you guys, you used your three seamers, your spinner, you bowled these lines. We've gone away from that. We have to. And he said, have you seen what's happened to the pitches since then? He said, every year we come back and they're worse. Mm. And then copped the same thing in Sri Lanka around that same period where they doctored those wickets and those kids beat Australia 3-0. So, but I can get used to the idea of an away win being, except in countries like Australia and South Africa where they're not so rare, being as rare as hen's teeth and really coveted. So that, you know, that win by Steve Smith's team in India last year, was it? That was the first since 2004, and winning a test was so damn exciting because no one had done it for 13 years. So it kind of makes winning away really valuable. It's really boring when you go to England and, you know, they doctor the wickets to stop Mitchell Johnson or something like that, because you really do want to see fast bowling, don't you?
Mm. Yeah. In baseball, I only know this because a few years ago, Major League Baseball brought a game to Sydney, and they had a dirt doctor.
Curator.
Yeah, the dirt man.
And they had to fly the dirt in.
He was like a scientist or something.
A dirt bag.
And he it was his job to oversee how the fields were prepared in other countries. I mean, I don't know how big the ICC's resources are, but perhaps if they host another couple of Champions Trophies, they'll have the money together. But why can't they employ like an official to go with the match officials who's actually in charge of working with the curator on the pitches?
Ahead of time.
An independent person. Yeah. Just like they should have an independent doctor who can actually get people off the field if they're concussed. I don't think the ICC takes enough responsibility for their own product. And
good point.
I think unless they've run out of money or something, I mean, I can't see why you can't have a pitch person go in advance before each tour happens, work with the curators, and come to a level where we're actually going to see a pitch that works for the independent observer, not just for one team or one side.
I agree. That's what I've written. ICC need to be tougher on pitch preparation, and perhaps the nation should take more responsibility of providing better teams to play in the warm-up games. It's all really easy to throw out some really inexperienced players to the opposition before a test and give them little or no practice. But, you know, when we go to their country, they'll do the same. So I don't know if we should take a more holistic approach and try and make the warm-up games a little bit better for the team. So when they play that first test, they're a little bit more acclimatized.
Australia have been appalling on that in recent years. They've actually used it as a tactic against New Zealand. I really haven't enjoyed what Australia's done in recent years. There's just not a sense of fair play about that.
All right, next change coming out of the ICC, that all T20 international nations have been given full status now. So I went through some of the T20 nations, and should a T20 match between, say, Hungary and Mexico have the same status as a T20 match between Australia and England?
Are they the best players those countries have got? Why not? And how does that affect a match between Australia and England? Disagree with me, Ben?
Let's have a first.
Yeah, I don't care.
If Hungary and Mexico play each other, I don't care.
Yeah, I'd probably watch, actually.
I wouldn't.
I'm half Hungarian, so I would definitely watch.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why they got mentioned.
No, I did go through the list of
And let me guess, you love Mexican food.
I do, actually. the Jeters. I agree with you. I think it's great that they've all been given full status, and I think T20 cricket is the way of growing the game globally.
Don't these podcasts work better when everyone's in furious disagreement?
Yeah, but it's got to be real.
Okay.
It's got to be real.
Right. Okay.
I'll tell you what I'm really annoyed about. Virat Kohli has chosen to play county cricket with Surrey over a test match against Afghanistan. I hope Rashid Khan bowled Afghanistan to victory and India are the laughing stocks of world cricket. That is an absolute joke.
I agree, but I got less angry about it when I heard that Australia wasn't playing Bangladesh in test matches. But theoretically, I think
we're angry at all. I'm angry at both, though. We can be angry at everyone.
Yeah, I think that's pretty poor.
Can you imagine, when we played Bangladesh 15 years ago, can you imagine Steve Waugh going at the time, I'm not going to play this game, I'm going to go and play for New South Wales to get ready for the proper games. I mean, that's so insulting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Pete would know better than me, but I guess Indian cricket just operates by different standards, and, you know, I don't think Virat Kohli's going to really be judged for that in his own country, is he? I mean, it looks kind of scandalous to the rest of us, but... he's not being
held
to the same criticism as perhaps Steve Smith would be in a similar circumstance.
The Indians can be pretty critical of their own, but it's weird. It would be much better, wouldn't it, if he played? I get why he's not, but geez, a consistent cricketer, isn't he? Like, you know, when Smith, I always say Smith, hands down, best Test batsman in the world. Then AB crawled out of his grave recently and maybe start to doubt myself. But Virat, what about that consistency across formats? I mean, I'm not a good stats man, but I think he averages 50 in every format. He's an extraordinary cricketer.
He's like a phenomenal one-day player.
Yeah. Got a face you just want to slap, but good
cricketer. But my thing is, how exciting was it when we saw Ireland break into Test cricket last week against Pakistan, and now Afghanistan are breaking into Test cricket, and he doesn't even want to be there. So it's a bit of a finger to the game, really, from Virat.
I'd love to go to Afghanistan to cover a Test match. That'd be a fascinating country.
I think it's been played in India, but...
Oh, right. Okay. But I want to go to... doesn't matter. I want to go.
This man will go anywhere for cricket. Like, he will go anywhere. My own heart.
You've got to go try everything once. I won't finish that sentence.
All right, guys. Well, I think we'll end the podcast. It's been a great week. So lots of news on the podcast. Let's go through it. Firstly, big feature interview coming next week. I sat down recently with Erin Holland, a former Miss World, who has been presenting at the IPL. So really great insights into the IPL and get to know a little bit about Erin as well.
Did she play cricket?
No, but she's a massive cricket tragic. Her partner's a famous cricketer, so she's very cricket.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you have to have played cricket. I was just wondering if she had. Yeah,
but I'm not sure she hasn't played.
Yeah,
no.
She's a very good commentator.
Yeah, she's a great broadcaster. That's next week. Ben, you're off on holiday for a month. Bon voyage, heading to the States. Are you excited?
Very excited indeed. Not so much excited about the flight, but...
With a kid.
Yeah.
But, hey, mate, probably up the front end of the plane.
If you manage to fly with a baby...
They take the kid off you up the front end of the plane. Yeah, they do. You'll be right.
Yeah, so, no, it'll be great, manners.
Catch some baseball in New York?
Hope so, yeah. The two New York teams are playing each other while I'm there, so I'll try and get along to that.
Excellent. Hope we'll catch up with you when you get back.
Certainly, yeah. Thanks for having us again, Menace.
Always a pleasure. Pete, you're going to London, as we discussed, and the UK, to see the one-day tour.
And I don't want you to think that anything's going on, but I might even drop over to New York to see Ben on the way back.
Wow, fantastic. You go to the baseball together.
Yep.
And
do you like that? Or?
Hey, I'm only going just to make sure you don't get a story.
So how long?
Exclusive. Lock you off, mate.
We'll see him following Steve Smith around Brooklyn or something.
I did hear that Australia was looking at possibly signing Derek Jeter to take over from Steve Smith.
Really? Yeah.
Did he just sack the journalist because he wrote some things not very nice about his team in baseball? So it wouldn't be good for us.
Smithy was seen at a hotel in Williamsburg that's got very nice views of Manhattan Island. It's a good pub. We'll go there, mate.
Well, listeners, thanks so much for downloading another episode of Cricket Unfiltered. Remember... Pete's trying to put me off. Remember, rate and review the show on whatever app you listen to the show on. And I'll be back next week with Erin Holland.